The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 7, text number 33, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on January 3rd, 2010, in Wellington, New Zealand.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 7, the son of Drona punished, text number 33. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tata asadyata rasa Dharunam Gautami sutam Babanda marshatam raksha Pushum rasha nayayata Tata asadyata rasa Dharunam Gautami sutam Babanda marshatam raksha Pushung rasanayata. Translation and purport by our most beloved founder Acharya. His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharja Astatarjadashi Shima, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. Purport. Ashwatthama's mother, Kripi, was born in the family of Gautama. The significant point in this shloka is that Ashwatthama was caught and bound up with ropes like an animal. According to Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was obliged to catch the son of a Brahman like an animal as a part of his duty, dharma. This suggestion by Sridhar Swami is also confirmed in the later statement of Sri Krishna. Ashwatthama was a bona fide son of Dronacharya and Kripi. Because he had degraded himself to a lower status of life, it was proper to treat him as an animal and not as a Brahman.
Sri Guru, Sri Jata, Padakamalam, Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupa Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Dam Sajiva Sadaitam Zavadutam Prijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
So, it is significant to note that simply being born as the son of a Brahmin does not make you a Brahmin. Nowadays in India, that caste consciousness is still going on, that I am in a Brahmin family, so you must give me the respect of a Brahmin. You are in a Shudra family, so you're not allowed in the temple, you can't study the Vedas, etc., etc. That is called Asuri Varnashram, the demoniac caste system based on birth, not on qualities. But what does Krishna say? Chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita. He says, Chaturvarnam maya shishtam guna karma vibhagasha. Does he say janma? No. Guna karma. According to your qualities and activities, that determines your position in the Vedic society. Whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or less than Shudra. You see, it is simply according to your qualities, and those qualities are manifested in your actions. Here we see that Ashvatthama is acting as lower than a Brahmin. Therefore he's being treated. He acted like animal, now he's being treated like animal. You see. That is called Daivi Varnashram system, where it is according to your birth. I mean, according to your qualities and activities, not according to your birth. The Brahmanas wanted to keep that position of status within the society, even though they weren't qualified, so they made it that it's by birth and not by qualities. But here we see very clearly the birth in as a son of a Brahmin does not make one a Brahmin, does not make one respectable. One has to actually deserve that respect by proper qualities and proper activities. That's one very important point from this verse. Another is that anger can be used in Krishna's service. Arjuna is a pure devotee, and here he's blazing with anger. You see? So it's not that Krishna consciousness is everything, it's just, you know, everything's cool, everything is okay, whatever you want to do is all right because it's all one. You know, this is the Mayavadi so-called, you know, peace, 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 peace. A devotee is willing to fight. He's willing to fight. Prabhupada said there are two great literatures in Vedic culture, the Ramayana and Mahabharata. Both of them are fighting. Arjuna and Hanuman, you see, they're both fighting. So Prabhupada said, I do not want sit-down Vaishnavas, I want fighting Vaishnavas. So if you can fight against atheism, against sinful life, by strongly preaching, you see, that will give very good pleasure to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is very strong in fighting. In fact, he told us one time, he said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. He's like a prize, a champion fighter, you see. Undefeated in the ring, in the boxing ring. A philosophical discussion. Nobody can defeat Prabhupada. Prabhupada wanted us to be very, very expert in this art of preaching. In fact, it was a nice story. One time, he was traveling to Nairobi, bringing the deities, actually, Radha Krishna deities. He was traveling with one disciple, Madhuvisha Maharaj at the time. And so they were sitting there. Just imagine, you're sitting there, you have Radha and Krishna deities in front of you. You're sitting there with Prabhupada, just the two of you, for like an 8-hour flight. Just imagine how nectarine that would be. Wow, I'm here sitting with Prabhupada for 8 hours with Radha and Krishna deities. So then Prabhupada turned to Madhavi and surprised him very much. He said, So, are you ready to fight? He was amazed. What's going on here? You know, Baba said, all right. He said, let's see. Yeah, you be the Mayavadi, and I will be the Vaishnava. Yes. And we will debate. So Prabhupada completely smashed all the Mayavadi arguments, totally decimated every one of them, as you would expect that he would, of course. And then Prabhupada said, okay, now we will switch. I will be the Mayavadi and you be the Vaishnava. And again they debated, and Prabhupada completely destroyed the Vaishnava philosophy with Mayavadi argument. And Madhavisa he couldn't say a word. Prabhupada had totally defeated his arguments. So Prabhupada said, this is how you should know the art of debating, you see. You can take your own arguments and defeat them. You should be so expert. And I know that I was trained in the art of debate when I was in high school. And that's actually how we did it. It wasn't a question of right or wrong. It was a question of who was the best debater, you see. That year we had a topic, it was the proliferation of nuclear weapons. Should there be non-proliferation, no spreading allowed, or should it be allowed to spread? That was the debate topic that year. And we'd go to the tournaments, and I'd have a debate partner. His name was Abe Zimmerman. So Abe and I, we were debate partners. It'd be, and we would, we'd square off with another team. Two sessions, we would take the pro spreading of nuclear weapons, and two sessions we would take anti. So you'd be judged not on whether the weapons had spread or not, but how good you were in the art of argument. And this way you would pair off in one match after another match, and finally you get to the top, and you know, the champion of the tournament, and get some big medal, you know, and get the recognition for being a champion debater. So this way we were trained. This is exactly what Prabhupada is saying. You should be very expert in the art of fighting, philosophically fighting, you see. That just like a Kshatriya in the battlefield, you throw a certain weapon, he knows how to counter it, you see. He's expert. You can throw this kind of weapon, that kind of weapon, he knows how to counteract it. So we should be very expert in the art of preaching, that no matter what they tell us, we can come back and defeat it in a very wonderful way that they actually appreciate in the arguments. I know Prabhupada very much encouraged us to defeat the Mayavadis. When I joined our movement in 1971 in Austin, Texas, at that time, it's a big university, a huge university, largest in the U.S. actually, University of Texas at Austin. And it was the height of the countercultural days. Everybody was into Mayavadi philosophy. That was the end philosophy in those days. Shishi Gornitai Ki Jai, Shishi Radharamana Ki Jai. So there was one professor of Buddhism. And he would teach in a big, huge hall. And they, like an auditorium, it was a stage, it was really quite a setup. And the deal was that anybody who wanted to audit, even if you're not a registered student, you could go in and audit the classes. And they were very popular with the hippies. They would go in and hear him speaking Mayavadi philosophy. So we told Prabhupada about this. And Prabhupada said, you should challenge him to a public debate. But he said, reply with a cool head. So this is the key. If you, in the art of debating or presenting Krishna consciousness, you got to keep cool. You may be burning, hot burning in your heart to defeat them, and that's all right, but your style of presentation should not be like a temper tantrum. You should be very cool-headed. like a champion fighter, you know, who does it with style. Not that it, you know, aristocratic style. Very, Prabhupada was like that. Very, in a very first-class way, he would defeat them. And they would actually appreciate his expertise. He told one scientist, he said, you are a demon. In such a way that he said, yes, you're right, I am a demon. So, of course, we can't imitate Prabhupada. He was a pure devotee. He was also an old man. An old man children and old men can get away with all kinds of saying all kinds of things that the rest of us can't get away with. Of course, we'll all have an opportunity to be old men sooner or later, or old women sooner or later. Time and tide wait for no man. But the point is, just as Arjuna is using anger in a rightful way, anger are the desire to counteract what the nonsense that's going on in the world around us is very good to use for Krishna. We say that there's no, you know, mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals should be brought under control. That means you should never be angry about your own position. But if the Vaishnavas, the spiritual master, the Supreme Lord, the Vaishnavas, the sadhus are being insulted, then one should be very keen to defeat such arguments if at all possible. And if it's not possible, then it's best to get out of it so you're not exposed to it, not exposed to hearing that. So that's one nice point. Another nice point here. Another nice point is this word dexterously, which means very, very expertly, you see. Just like the term ambidextrous means somebody who can use their right hand and their left hand, either one, very expertly to do things. Ambidextrous. So he dexterously arrested the son of Gautami. Prabhupada explains that expert is one of the qualities, the 26 qualities of the Vaishnavas. So this is, as we become more Krishna conscious, we will naturally be expert in dealing with everything, dexterous in everything. In the old days, 26 Second Avenue, the devotees were looking to get a bigger place. And some con man pulled the wool over their eyes. He showed them to some places. He kept hinting that he might donate it. He was a real con man. This time Prabhupada was in San Francisco. And he wasn't there to see what was going on, but the devotees were writing him letters. But they had somebody had given a nice donation, a few thousand dollars. They had a few thousand dollars sitting in the bank account, which in those days was a lot of money. So anyway, this con man convinced the devotees but they got to give the money. It's some kind of a guarantee that they were serious in buying the place. There was no contract. They just handed the money to him. Completely naive. You see, he was cheating them, stealing the money. But Prabhupada kept telling him, don't turn over any money unless I authorize it. But they actually were so much carried away by this con man, they did it anyway. And Prabhupada had to come back, and he was able to get the money back out of this crook. So the point is that devotees were not very expert. They were very naive. But Prabhupada said, I'm a Calcutta boy. You know, he knew, he knows, big city boy, Calcutta boy. He was an expert. From his background and also the fact that he was a pure devotee, he was very, very expert in doing everything. So, and he said that sannyasi means that he can do anything expertly. He can do accounting, he can do anything, cleaning, cooking, preaching, anything. So this is actually one of the qualities that each one of us should try to develop, to become expert in everything. It may be a service I like, and it's easy to get expert in that because I like it. Maybe a service I don't like, but I should be expert at that also. That is called well-rounded devotee, you see. We should be able to do anything very nicely. In fact, the smart devotee will see, what are those things I don't like to do? Let me focus on becoming expert in those things. So if you can cover your weak areas, if you become an expert in those areas, then the other areas will be very easy. So that's one of the strategies of how to quickly advance in Krishna consciousness. Find those things you don't like to do. You'd rather not do it, you know. Take those things up and learn how to do them first class, you see. And then you'll become very, very dexterous, very, very expert. And then there's now another point here, killing innocent boys in their sleep. A very shocking thing, but it's happened now. The abortions are going on like crazy. The poor children, you see. Ashwatthama, just see, he's being bound up like an animal for killing some innocent children. But the modern day governments, they're sanctioning the killing of innocent children, and there's no punishment. No punishment. If there was actual Krishna conscious government, they would take these people who have abortions and the doctors who perform the abortion, they would bind them up like animals. As Ashwatthama is being bound by Arjuna. It's such a sinful thing what they're doing. But it's become so common that we think it's just part of the natural landscape. We can go to a grocery store and walk past the meat department and not think anything about it, but that our own mother's flesh is being peddled. Come on, eat your mother's flesh. Come on. You see? It's such a shocking thing. It's like unbelievably horrible, just like, you know, the World Trade Center crashing down. It's a shocking thing. People were completely devastated emotionally by such a thing, but yet we take the peddling of our mother's flesh as a normal, it was a normal day. I saw my mother's flesh being sold in the store to eat, and it's a normal day. I didn't even think anything of it. We're very much desensitized by the atmosphere we live in to subtly think, well, it's okay. Subtly, even though we know with our intelligence it's not good, we feel comfortable with it. The mind feels comfortable with these things. Okay, just by conditioning, we become desensitized to it. You see, I'm saying we're still subject to the same desensitization that the general public is subject to, because we're stuck in the middle of their culture. We're dealing with it every day, seeing it every day. So we also have a tendency to become desensitized to the horrors that are going on around us at every minute. So we really have to, hear from the Shastra, hear from sadhus, hear from gurus, and, you know, keep a clear vision of understanding how we should be seeing things and understanding what is actually going on around me. We have to understand that it's a complete criminal civilization from the top to the bottom. From the government leaders, they're the biggest criminals, down to the ordinary citizens. Everyone is criminal. Everyone is like Ashwatthama. They all should be bound up for their sins. They should all be bound like animals. If we had righteous government, you see, they would all be bound up. They're eating meat. You see, that's such a sinful thing. Especially cow. In the Vedic culture, they're allowed to eat the lower class, the lower animals. A goat, you see. But the cow eating, that is gross, very gross sin. Anyone who engages in cow eating, they become very punishable. So, we have to keep this vision, understand what is actual human civilization. So what are the points here? Lord Krishna, the supreme authority of all religious principles, in the Vedas, has personally pointed out these differences. And he is about to explain the reason for this in the following shlokas. That being born as a Brahmin doesn't mean that you have to be respected as a Brahmin. You have to actually earn the respect by your qualities and your activities. And actually, Prabhupada told us, it's in his books I've read, he's saying that sometimes in the Krishna consciousness movement, there are persons who are actually envious persons. They're devotees of Kali Chela. He says such persons are not to be they're not to be respected. They should be avoided. It's a very heavy thing that Prabhupada is saying. So it's not that simply one can put some tilak on the nose, put kanti mala on your neck, have a little sika, and put on some devotional clothes, and that makes you a twice born person. Not automatic. There's a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Maybe you've heard of that song. Here comes another disciple of Kali. Kali Chela, he has tilak in the nose and kanti mala, but he's keeping so many women for illicit sex. Kali Chela. So we have to be careful. We are not Kali Chelas like this Ashwatthama, you see. That we make a show of being a devotee, but then secretly behind the scenes we're breaking the principles. We have to become pure. This is the whole point of our pure devotional service seminar. We'll be having part two this evening. We really have to seriously cultivate purity. Making an external show of being a devotee is not going to fool Yamaraj. Yamaraj knows what's going on. Prabhupada told us in Vrindavan, Yamaraj has his book and he's noting down every sinful activity we commit. Every sinful activity, you see. Krishna also has a book. He's noting down our service. So we want to be in Krishna's book, not Yamaraj's book. You see. You're being observed. Every one of us is being observed at every minute. Even our thoughts are being observed by higher authorities. So we might as well just surrender and cultivate pure bhakti. You know, making a show, being a well-respected man around ISKCON is not enough. We have to cultivate purity, internal purity. At the time of death, everything, all the cards are laid on the table. There's nothing hidden. All the cards are laid on the table. Everything is seen by Yamaraj, everything is seen by Krishna. So we want to be that on the homeward bound train, not the Yamaloka bound train at the time. So we'll be going more into the importance of pure devotional service at the seminar this afternoon. So we can stop here and see if there's any questions regarding today's subject matter or anything regarding Krishna consciousness. We'll be welcome also. Yeah.
Regarding the caste system, according to guna and work.
What's that?
According to guna and karma.
Yeah.
Besides the four castes, there are so many according to the karma, like someone is a tailor. There is a caste for that. Someone is a shoemaker. There is a caste for that. So how do we differentiate what is the real caste system?
Yes, the caste principle will just expand it out. A caste of a caste of a caste of a caste of a caste. You know, just keep. It's like this tendency to add more rules and regulations. Which can cause one to fall down from devotional service. Sometimes we see that in ISKCON somebody wants to introduce some new rules that Prabhupada never introduced. It's like trying to go one up on Prabhupada. Now I will establish these principles because I read some verse somewhere, but Prabhupada never established. So we should be careful of this tendency to completely overwhelm the Krishna consciousness with legalities, this rule, that rule, this rule, that rule, forget the essence, which is Krishna consciousness. So there's a tendency to do that. Well, we create this caste, they have these rules, they have to act by these rules, it can go on and on and on, and we forget the essence. It's actually just lording it over. It's people's lording it over mentality to create all these different castes. The real thing is to rise to the transcendental platform. Brahmabhuta prasanatmana sochati na kangshati. You see. Samaksraveshu bhuteshu. To see all living entities equally. The spiritual platform. That is the enlightened position of Krishna consciousness. To see everyone, pandita samadarshinaha. To see all living entities equally. How the Lord is present in the heart of all living entities. So this should be emphasized. There are the divisions, the basic divisions given in the Vedic literatures are not wrong. They are very practical and suitable. That everyone should be engaged in a natural way according to their propensities. Not that someone who is inclined in one way should be forced to act in a different way beyond his inclination. Everyone should be engaged according to their inclinations. That is the Vedic culture, their natural inclinations. Those who are inclined intellectually or to priestly life, they should be encouraged to become brahmanas. Those who have the militaristic spirit, they should be inclined, they should be encouraged to become kshatriya and to take up a leadership role, administrative role, powerful administrative role. In this way, the natural divisions are there, but without the transcendental vision, what's the use? Shama eva kevalam, no pada yad yati radim, shama eva hi kevalam. The occupational duties a man may perform according to his nature, only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So any other questions? Yeah?
Maharaj, is it possible for a devotee to be confident about his devotional service but not proud at the same time?
Is it possible for
a devotee to be confident about his devotional service and not doubtful at the same time?
Without being proud. Mm. Well, actually, one should be very confident. It's called faith, you see. So, if one has very strong faith, is that pride? No.
Doubtful.
Huh?
Doubtful at the same time.
Yeah, pride.
Oh, pride, okay.
Yeah. So, for ourselves, we should always feel very meek and lowly. Very insignificant. That is humility. But the teachings of Krishna, the glories of Srila Prabhupada, the glories of this movement that he has created, we glorify that unlimitedly. We're very, very proud of our Prabhupada, what he has done. We're very proud of our Lord Krishna and his teachings. You see, that is not false ego or materialistic pride. That is proper to feel very, very proud of Prabhupada and what he has done and the devotees, what they are doing. That is very good. For ourselves, we should think, actually, I'm just a hopeless case, but somehow the devotees have been very kind. They've allowed me to associate with them. And for ourselves, we should be very meek and humble. But the process of Krishna consciousness and the Krishna consciousness movement, the ISKCON society, we should be very proud of these things and we should defend them against all attacks by the envious persons. That is not considered false ego or pride. That is faith in Srila Prabhupada and what the movement that he has created by his divine potency. Does that help? Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, like you said, that there are some agents of Kali in ISKCON. Like,
yeah, Prabhupada says and there are agents of Kali in the Krishna consciousness movement. He says that.
Yeah, so there are also some naive devotees also in ISKCON. So how?
Some what?
Naive devotees?
No.
Naive.
Naive. Naive.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how the
Well, everybody has to be trained. That's why Prabhupada wanted Bhakti Shastri training for everyone, you see. Everyone should be very knowledgeable in these teachings. And then you can see if somebody's... I mean, sometimes devotees do horrible things, you know. They act as agents of Kali. I mean, one of my disciples, she went to her temple president for counseling, and he had seduced her and had illicit sex with her. Horrible thing. He was doing all kinds of nonsense like this, polluting the Brahmacharinis. And it was a long time before he was detected and rooted out. So these things sometimes happen in our society. We have persons who are acting like agents of Kali within our movement. So one has to not naively think that just because somebody has tilak on the nose that that means they're strictly following the principles. We have to actually see what are the principles that Prabhupada has given and see very clearly what's going on around us, and not be tolerant of some of persons who are disobeying the principles. It happened in our New York temple. This is an interesting story, but there was a sannyasi. He was the temple president. But then this woman came to the temple, Japanese woman, and she told the devotees that she was the heiress to the Toyota fortune. She was from the Toyota family, and she was going to inherit the Toyota fortune. And devotees believed her. She was an expert con artist. She became a devotee. Actually, the temple president thought, well, this is such an important asset for our movement. I'll sacrifice my sannyas. And he married her. He actually married this woman. And she was treated like Maharani, you know. When the class was going on, somebody would be fanning her. When she was listening to the class, she would have a female attendant who would fan her while she was hearing the classes. I mean, that's how I've personally seen. When she came to Miami, her female attendant came with her and was fanning her while she was hearing the Bhagavatam class. She was being fanned. I mean, it was really something. This person was a con artist. She was simply she was tricking us. And finally it was exposed that the whole thing was just a scam. And, you know, that she's gone. So, you know, sometimes people come to our movement, just like all these devotees who did child abuse, you know, who've been dealt with very strongly, and sometimes persons come and they maintain their attachment to sinful life, and yet they want to present themselves as devotees, but behind the scenes they're doing so many nonsense things. It's up especially to our leaders to be very vigilant and expert to see that the members are actually, you know, strictly following the principles that Prabhupada has given. It's not that we have to just, you know, forgive somebody again and again and again. Well, he's a devotee and he's trying, but he goes on doing some nonsense thing, you know. Seducing the Brahmacharinis or something. We have to be tolerant of it. No, we have to be very heavy. If people are violating the principles within our society, and exploiting the society for sense enjoyment, we have to be very strong on these points. And not allow this to go on. I mean, Prabhupada was very strong if persons were just very, very offensive. He was very strong. There was one devotee, I used to be on a party with him. And in those days, nobody ever said anything bad about the GBC. The GBC is what Prabhupada said, the GBC are my best men, and we had faith in Prabhupada. But this person, he said, GBC, there's a saying in English, someone has a chip on the shoulder attitude, means a negative, very negative, skeptical attitude, called chip on the shoulder attitude. So he said, GBC means got a big chip. That's what it stands for. So in this way, he was criticizing the GBC, you see. And when I first met him, he visited our temple. We were all brand new devotees, even our president. And he tried to take over the temple. He actually tried to pull a coup and take over the temple when he came to visit us. He was quite a character. Anyway, he finally, there was a darshan he had with Prabhupada in Los Angeles. And he was complaining about so many complaints about the movement and the leaders, complaining. You know what Prabhupada told him? He said, just go earn money and enjoy. In other words, get out. His own initiated disciple, he said, earn money and enjoy. That's my instruction to you. There's a certain standard of one has to actually be someone who can participate in this society. There's a certain standards of behavior, of propriety. It's not that anybody can come here and do anything and be accepted as a bona fide devotee because they're chanting japa and they're wearing tilak on their nose. There's certain standards of behavior. And those standards have to be upheld. That's a fact. Ashwatthama really deviated from the standards, so he was dealt with very strongly. You see. So, yeah, we can't be sentimental sometimes. Sometimes the leaders are sentimental about some old buddy they had from the brahmachari days, but he's doing all nonsense. And they let him get away with it for some time because of foolish sentiment. But we have to be very, very strong in dealing with persons who are deviating from the principles. And to be very, very strong. Just like Ashwatthama had to be, was dealt with very strongly by Arjuna. So anything else? Yes?
Well, I'll make a statement first and then I'll ask you a question. We're talking about standards here, and in most cases we are talking about standards which was obviously set by Srila Prabhupada. Now, where our devotees, especially in here in Wellington, Newlands, have been confused in the last month or two, has been the different statements by different sannyasis on the standards. Now, this is standards when I'm
okay, difference. I'm missing a few words due to my deafness. You're saying different statements from different sannyasis.
On standards.
On what the standard is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when I'm talking about standards, like, mm-hmm. I'll give you some examples. Like,
okay.
When women are not pure, what service they can do and when what service they can't do.
Right.
Then if a baby is born, a devotee couple.
Yeah.
Had a newborn baby in their family. When the husband can come and do the seva, when the wife can come and do the seva, and that sort of thing. When somebody dies in the family, again the same question. So, two or three different sannyasis have given two different standards.
Yeah.
So the problem is the devotees here are confused.
They're confused. Well, see that's why we have a standard procedure. That's the temple president and the GBC. See, they are the actual standard bearers for this temple. You're the temple president, you and the GBC. Who's your? You have David Mehta Swami?
David Mehta Swami, Rami Swami.
Whatever position the two of you take and give to the devotees, that should be taken as the standard.
Well,
if other sannyasis say something different, that is nullified because they are not the GBC and the temple president.
That's where the problem is, Maharaj. Devamrita Swami says one thing, Ramay Swami says another thing.
You should follow your GBC.
Both the GBC is for they haven't got the standard. This is the problem. The GBC members.
Do you have more than one GBC?
Yes, three.
Yeah, there are three here.
You have three of them.
And they
disagree amongst themselves.
They're not disagreeing, but they're not disagreeing. I won't say that they're disagreeing, but they have given different message to the congregation here. Different GBCs have given different messages. So last time when Ramay Swami was here, I asked Ramay Swami, I said,
Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj?
Ramay Swami.
Ramay
Swami.
So I said to I humbly requested him, I said, Maharaj, you have been chairperson of the GBC, and can you tell me if the GBC has got, is there a written standard for this thing? And he said that we should look into it. He said, Prabhupada has made several statements in different places.
Right.
But whether there is a written statement, he said, we'll have to look into it. Now, this was something general. Now I'm coming to the question of direct sort of question. Where we are talking about standards.
Okay.
Now, when you read about Ekadasi, it clearly says that in Ekadasi, it should be total fasting from everything. only grains. It says it's not even grain. But it says that if you can't manage with water, then you can take fruits. If fruit is not enough, and you, for some reason, then you can have like root crops and things like that. Now, the problem with the devotees is they are always looking to have, like, Ekadasi is not Ekadasi anymore, it is gone. They make the best feast is made on Ekadasi. Because the devotees still think that, you know, well, Prabhupada said that, you know, you can have fruits and you can have root crops. So they prepare a whole feast on Ekadasi.
They do what?
They prepare a big feast.
You know, that was the standard that in the old days of ISKCON, Ekadasi was a feast. That used to be the standard. It was carrot halva and peanuts and potatoes. That used to be the standard. I just know from the old days, being around when Prabhupada was here, it was just no grains and no beans. That was all. This whole thing as well, adding more things to the list. You can find so many verses. If we start going in and doing our own research in the Vedas, you will find millions and billions of rules and regulations. You'll drive ourselves crazy.
Yeah.
You won't even be able to, a man who doesn't have a sikha, for example. Some of our householders don't have sikha. You have a sikha? Oh, good. Yeah. But, there's so many rules and regulations. I mean, if you really get into Prabhupada, there's a famous morning walk in Mayapur. I love it. It was called, they titled the tape, the proper application of rules and regulations. So Prabhupada told about when I came to your country, I was staying with one couple, and I was keeping the boga I was offering to Krishna in the refrigerator, but then I saw that there was meat in the refrigerator. And then Prabhupada said, and if I cried that I had broken my rules and regulations. In other words, what he meant was, if I had been fanatic about the rules, I couldn't have even come to America to start this movement. So sometimes rules have to be broken. He said, in the presence of your spiritual master, you should always inquire from him. So Prabhupada indicated that rules and regulations sometimes may have to be broken, as he had to break the rule about not putting your boga for offering the Lord in the same refrigerator with meat. Of course, it was for the cats. It was cat food. It wasn't for the humans, but still. So Prabhupada says also that for the Mayavadi sannyasi, it's very strict rules. He said, for Vaishnava sannyasi, there's leniency. So if even there is leniency in the matter of rules and regulations for a Vaishnava sannyasi, what about a Vaishnava brahmachari, grihastha, or vanapas? Even the sannyas, which is the most strict order, he said there is leniency in Vaishnava sannyas in following rules and regulations. But then he also said, but don't take advantage of it. In other words, don't go too far. Well, I'm a preacher. Like they used to do, the devotees would go out on book distribution, and they would go into a grocery store, and they would go, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. The whole thing's offered now. The whole store is offered. Now we can just purchase whatever we want and eat it. Could we just Sri Vishnu the whole grocery store? So anyway, where do you draw the line on these standards? I mean, it used to disturb me. I was sometimes wondered, because where do you draw the line? Because we would sometimes, I was traveling with Vishnu Janaswami, and we would pull up, we had no water, so we just pull into some apartment, take the hose and fill up our tanks, and nobody was looking, and then head out again. And technically, it could be called stealing water, you know, because somebody's water meter, you're taking water, you know, it is stealing. So I wrote Prabhupada and asked him, what about, is it okay to steal for Krishna? And Prabhupada said that actually, He gave the example, you know, there was this Guru Maharajji. He was caught smuggling jewels into India. And Prabhupada said it ruined his preaching. He said, Prabhupada said we shouldn't steal anything. And my temple president, he told me, I said, we need some chalk for the blackboard in the kitchen where we write down things, you know. He said, so I wanted his permission that we could buy some chalk from the store. And he said, no, just go to the campus and steal the piece of chalk. That was his instruction. So I asked my GBC man, because Prabhupada said not to steal. My temple president said I should steal. The GBC said don't steal. So sometimes there's these, you know, there's different opinions. So we have a hierarchy within our society. There's the GBC representative, and then there's even the whole GBC body. If ultimately something has to be resolved, they can be taken up. The Supreme Court is the GBC body, you see. We can, and Prabhupada said that collectively you make me up. So Prabhupada has actually manifested his directions. They are the executors of his will. So when it comes down to ultimate, you know, getting some controversy straightened out, take it to the GBC, all the way to the global body if you have to. And then whatever they say, then we accept that. Okay, that is a decision. And they reverse it the next year, then we change our position along with them. That happens sometimes. The GBC will make a resolution and then they'll change it. Because they realize it, but the principle is to follow the higher authority. And then we're always properly situated, doing what Prabhupada wanted us to do. Prabhupada himself was very surrendered to the higher authority. There's one pastime when the devotees were in the airport seeing Prabhupada off, the days before the security, where everybody could go in and sit there in all the airports. So, and there was like 300 devotees. Prabhupada was sitting there and they were all surrounding him, you know, sitting on the floor, completely blocking the passageway. Nobody could walk through that area. So the airport officials were distraught. You know, how can we get these people to move? So they said, can you move, please? You're blocking the sidewalk. Devotees weren't going to leave Prabhupada's lotus seat for anything. They just sat there. They wouldn't budge. And then, so they finally, they kept asking. They finally got to one of the GBC men. And they asked him, can these people please move? So the GBC dutifully understood and it had to be done. So he stood up on a chair and he made an announcement. All ISKCON devotees should immediately leave this area. But not one devotee would move. Except for one. You know who it was? His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. He was announced, all ISKCON devotees must leave this area. And Prabhupada got up to leave the area. So, Prabhupada is showing us, by his own example, that I am also under the GBC's direction. You see? And if Prabhupada himself is under the GBC's direction, then we must also be. If we are true followers of Prabhupada, we must be in a GBC direction. That means ISKCON. ISKCON means those who are agreeing to work under the guidance of the GBC. You see, that's the real ISKCON. Now, some people are arguing that they're the real ISKCON. You see, they're the Ritvik people, the Narayan Maharaj people. They say that we're the real ISKCON, that they are the real ISKCON and we are not. You see, we're not ISKCON. In fact, Narayan Maharaj even went so far to say that anybody who stays in ISKCON is not a sincere devotee. The sincere devotees all leave ISKCON and come and take shelter of me. That's what he stated recently, last February. It's on YouTube. You can see it yourself where he's saying it on YouTube. So we have to, what's the standard? Is Narayan Maharaj the new standard? That if you stay in ISKCON, you're not a sincere devotee. The only sincere devotees are the ones that leave ISKCON and join him. What's the standard? The standard is what is established by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. If we have direct instructions on Prabhupada on a particular thing, that's fine. But if he says one thing one place, another thing another place, then follow your GBC. You have three GBCs. So co-GBC, so if one of them says one thing and two say the other thing, go with the two. Because then you got a clear majority, you know, two against one. So, and you can always inquire. Your spiritual master is also there too. You see. So the spiritual masters, if they're, they should be just like Prabhupada. Well, I got to follow the GBC. Tell all the ISKCON. The spiritual masters should train their disciples to follow their authority. As Prabhupada trained us also. He wrote me a letter from Paris one time and told me to do whatever my temple leader says. You see. So the gurus should not have their own little personality cult separate from ISKCON. That you just do what I say and don't do what your temple authorities say. Then they're not really part of ISKCON anymore. If they don't train their disciples to follow the ISKCON leaders, they're deviating from Srila Prabhupada. ISKCON means under the authority of the leadership that Prabhupada has given to us. That's the meaning of ISKCON. So the spiritual masters should train their disciples to follow their temple president, follow their GBC. In this way, there'll be perfect harmony. And a perfect harmony throughout the entire society. And as far as the issue of... I just look it up in the Veda base. That's what I do. Because I get all these emails, you know. People ask me all kinds of questions. I get the same thing, you know. In the temple, there'll be a difference of opinion. They'll ask me what's the right thing. And I just look it up in the Veda base. I do research on these things and find out what is Prabhupada saying about it. Yeah? Yes. I compare this to the old days of navigating when they used a sextant to calculate their latitude and longitude from the sun. I never did it, but I've heard about it. So what do you do if you're sailing, trying to sail in a sailboat all the way from, London to New York, you know? You're out there and all you can see is water. So you take your reading and gauge what is your position. Now maybe there's a slight, and you're just going across this huge body of water, thousands of miles. So what you have to do, there's some margin of error in any reading that you take to calculate your latitude and longitude. There's always going to be some margin of error there. So what you have to do is regularly take the readings. In that way, whatever deviation was there in the previous reading, that can be adjusted in the next reading. Whatever deviation is there in that reading can be adjusted in the next reading. So we have our annual readings. It's called the annual GBC meetings. Even if there's some error in a previous resolution, because the super soul's in the heart of all the GBC men, that can be adjusted. So even if there's something that's not really correct, as sometimes there has been, that will be adjusted. And another point is, Prabhupada said that we could, if devotees feel the GBC has made a mistake in some point, they're really convinced, the devotees can lobby the GBC, just like in politics. You can lobby the GBC, get your committees, get your petitions, you can go to the GBC men and say, look, this many devotees feel this is the way it should be, and we feel that you all should change the resolution. And the GBCs will hear such sincere things. You see, they're open. They don't think that they know everything. They feel they're humble servants. It's like we feel that we're humble servants. So if something is done in a very nice way, just like I personally felt there was one defect in the in some of the procedures of ISKCON, and I went to the GBC and I got it changed. They passed a resolution. I proposed it. With the help of Rabindra Sarup Prabhu, we made a resolution. We had Jaya Patakramaj look over it. After Rabindra Sarup and I, actually Rabindra Sarup wrote it I on my request. He were, and we actually got a new resolution on the books to address an area where I felt was not proper in the way ISKCON was, the laws of ISKCON were set up. So one can do that. If you feel something is wrong in the way the ISKCON is you know, the way ISKCON is structured, you can always, you know, find some persons who can help you, get a GBC man who's sympathetic with your position, have him sponsor. There has to be a GBC sponsor. Find a GBC man who will support your position and then make a nice resolution. Word it well, do, you know, word it in such a way that the GBC will approve it. So it can be done. Any member can put forward a resolution if they feel that something is wrong in the way we have ISKCON set up. Anything else? Yeah.
Sorry. I have a question from Bhagavad Gita Maharaj. Text.
All right, we can try. Yeah.
Chapter 5, text 14 and 15, where Lord Krishna says that the embodied spirit does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature.
Yes.
And the next text, Lord Krishna says, nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings are being bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. So, from these texts, what I understand, Maharaj, is the spirit soul which is inside the body is not responsible for any actions which he is doing. But at the same time, Supreme Lord is also not responsible.
No, he is responsible. Even though he's not the doer, he's responsible. So how can this be understood? It sounds contradictory, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, let's say that you, let's say you lost your intelligence and you joined Al-Qaeda. You became a devotee of Osama bin Laden. You went to Afghanistan, to Pakistan, or wherever they have their training camps. You got trained up, you're a terrorist now, you see. You've joined the terrorists. Okay, now as a terrorist, You're simply under their orders. They say, go here, here's your suicide vest. Now go here to this soccer game. That's your duty today. Go blow yourself up and kill as many as you can. Sit get a seat in a congested area of the stadium and blow yourself up. But let's say you survived that's a bad example. But let's say you were told to go and do some terrorism. In that case, you wouldn't be around to stand trial, but a bad example. So you've been told to go do something. You were caught. They caught you, killing all these people. Now they're putting you on trial. And you say, well, I didn't really do it. I was just following my orders, you know. I had no choice. I had to do it. Otherwise, they'd kill me if I didn't do it. You see? So, Your Honor, I'm not really responsible, but it was your choice to join Al-Qaeda. Once you're joined, you're trapped, because if you try to leave, they're going to shoot you. And if you stay, they're going to have you shoot other people. So once you join, you're trapped, but it was your decision to join. So you weren't the doer in one sense, but you were a doer in the other sense, because you chose to put yourself in there as a terrorist, you see. So you say, well, just the modes of nature doing it, Yamaraj. I didn't do it. I didn't murder those people. I didn't rape those women. I didn't rob those banks. It was just the modes. I'm not guilty. But your own envy of Krishna put you in a position where you became under the control of the modes of nature. That was your decision. So therefore, you're responsible. Just like another example, a drunk person. He goes so drunk, he can't even remember what he did last night. He wakes up from his hangover. He doesn't remember a thing he did last night. And then he found out that he murdered somebody the night before. He doesn't even remember it at all. He was so drunk, he has no remembrance of having done it. But still, he's guilty of murder. You see? So we are responsible for everything that we do, even though we're not the doers, because we chose to put ourselves in this position where we're agents of the modes of nature now. Now we have to take responsibility for everything done under the influence of the modes. Is that clear? Yeah. All right, so I'm sure I've gone over time here. I've been told the cutoff. Some temple presidents get very angry if I go too late, so I don't want to get in trouble with you, temple president, and wear out my welcome here. Krantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.